Everybody knows that times have been tough in Flint for a long time. Economic problems have been compounded by the contamination of the city's water supply. A new book confronts life in Flint in a way that shows that, in spite of the trouble, many people are sticking with the city. Scott Pohl has more about Happy Anyway, a Flint anthology. What's this about, Scott?
Well, Mark, the book is made up of 24 essays about Flint, written by people who live there and people who've left Flint over the years. We'll hear from one of those essays in a few minutes. First, though, I'll let editor Scott Atkinson explain what he was going for in Happy Anyway. Scott Atkinson, welcome to Current State.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. What's the idea behind Happy Anyway?
So the first idea was that I'd been writing for Belt Magazine, which is a branch of Belt Publishing, and I knew they did these anthologies about Rust Belt cities. And so the first idea was there should be one about Flint. And so I reached out to my publisher and I said, you know, there should be a book about Flint and I think I should edit it. And she said, cool. So that was pretty much it. And then I was stuck with the challenge of figuring out what did I want it to be. And this was in the fall of 2015 when the water crisis in Flint was underway, but we were just starting to learn how bad everything really was. And there's a lot of national press coming in more and more as time went on, and I realized going forward, I didn't want to do much with the water for a few reasons. One being that it's still an ongoing issue. The book is published now, and we still don't know how this is all going to shake out and what's going to happen. But also because everyone knows about the water, and that's kind of what Flint's become known for. It's, you know, post-industrial town that now has bad water. And I wanted to show Flint as a more nuanced city than that. The idea being that if people are going to pay attention to Flint, these are the other things you should know. So all the writers that reached out to me saying, like, well, what are you looking for? What are you looking for? I said, think of all the things people say about Flint that are true. You know, post-industrial town, bad water. That is the setting for your story. It is not the story. So let's talk about the things that go on here. If you live here every day, you don't spend every waking moment, you know, thinking about post-industrial life. You just think about life. So that was all I really wanted. And I really hoped to get a good cross-section of the city from that. And I think I did.
With a title like Happy Anyway, were you shooting for something that would be uplifting to the people of Flint or present a more positive image of Flint to outsiders who might read it?
I don't know if positive is the word I'd use, just because that word gets thrown around so much. But I think anyone who reads the book will realize it is not a book that is purely uplifting. As the title suggests. I like the title. The title is mine. Well, and I got the title from a story I did for Belt Magazine early on. I had planned on not doing anything on the water crisis as a freelancer for two reasons. One, there was just so much media in town. I go to my favorite cafes and, you know, I couldn't park, which people in Flint get really angry if they can't park. but also because I didn't want to feel like I was capitalizing on this tragedy as a freelancer. But Belt reached out to me and they said, well, you know, you're our Flint guy and we've got to do something. So I thought, okay, what story can I tell that isn't being told right now? And so I wanted to try to put the water crisis in perspective in that it is absolutely a crisis and a tragedy and something that deserves national attention. But Flint has been a place that is no stranger to crisis or tragedy of many kinds for a long time. And it was that before the water crisis. It is that also during the water crisis. And if they could replace every pipe and flush out every ounce of water, we will still have homicide and violent crime and mental health issues and problems in the educational system. It is still a city that has many crises. And so I found this guy named Bobby Jackson, goes by Pastor Bobby, and he runs this a homeless shelter in the north side of Flint. North side is sort of shorthand for a lot of blight and crime. And I knew that he'd been helping people with issues before and during and would continue to. And even meeting him and going to his modest shelter up there, I didn't realize just how true that was. Because I said to him, you know, Pastor Bobby, you're the water guy. And he says, well, I've always been the water guy. People had to come to him for water before. They might not have been lead tainted, but they were getting their water shut off because it was so expensive, or they were homeless and needed something to drink. He's got a shower in his basement, so people can come take a shower. So it really put in perspective exactly what I was going for. And he's the happiest guy you've ever will meet. I mean, he's constantly talking about blessings. And this is a guy who's, you know, a short walk from a place once called Buick City, where you once had I think, 27,000 factory workers. It's a big brownfield now. There's nothing there, essentially. And I described him as being happy anyway in that piece. I said, it's the only kind of happy you can be in Flint. You're sort of happy in spite of it all. And you find what happiness you can. So that was what I was going for. I did want it to be slightly uplifting when you look at the front cover. But I also want it to be a very real book. There are two attitudes in Flint that bother me equally. And it is the people who are sort of the naysayers, who talk about how terrible everything is and, you know, Flint is a wasteland, because it's not universally true. I mean, of course, there are bad places, and there's a lot of work to be done, but there's plenty of good going on. But then also the people who are so positive, and they focus on, you know, the dozen or so blocks of downtown. Flint's really not that big of a place, and at least downtown Flint. And they sort of pretend nothing bad is happening because we have, for example, like a new farmer's market, and these great coffee shops, which I love and I frequent, but that is not the extent of Flint. So I really wanted to show a more nuanced view of how this city functions.
You brought up the cover. I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to talk about the photo you chose for the cover. It depicts the Flint skyline at dawn or dusk. Mm-hmm. I can't tell. But in the foreground is a huge pile of rubble, and the photo was shot through a chain link fence.
Yeah.
Tell me about choosing that photo. What was the message that you thought that would convey to readers?
So a couple of things. We had so many discussions about the cover, and there were a few photos we talked about. My publisher, Ann Trubeck, finally made the executive decision to use that one. And I'm glad she did. It's a beautiful photo. It was made by taken by her designer, Shane Gramling, who's just a phenomenal designer and photographer. I had first looked for photos that would sort of capture the idea of happy anyway. There was actually a photo I wanted to use from the Flint Journal that I couldn't get permission for. And it showed this little boy with his shirt off on a sidewalk, just hands in the air, smiling underneath some caution tape. And I thought, goodness gracious, like that is what a juxtaposition there. But they wouldn't let me. So we started looking at other things, and this photo was just sort of always there. And by the end, it was just, yeah, this is the one. And I think it's great, too. I think it does kind of show what we're looking for. The pile of rubble is actually a pile of compost in a place called, a place that is transitioning from a former industrial site called Chevy in the Hole. They're turning it slowly into Chevy Commons, which would be like a big walkable park, funding providing. So, they've been doing these big compost heaps out there. There've been some art festivals out there to kind of reclaim the space, but it's still this giant stretch of concrete and gravel. And so I really like the idea that it's sort of, it's showing downtown. You've got the weather ball there. I mean, it's kind of, you have to be a Flintoid to know what that is, but, the farther away happiness of downtown. But then it's set against this backdrop of, you know, this place that we're trying to figure out what to do with.
Edward Ted McClelland is one of the writers included in Happy Anyway. We asked him to record some of his essay for us, so he stepped outside his house recently and recorded from his essay called Meet the Flintstones.
The 9/11 Memorial Corner occupies three of the four lots at the intersection of North and McClelland Streets on the vanishing north end of Flint. A cross between folk art and patriotic kitsch, its backdrop is a pentaptych of the Manhattan skyline, with the Twin Towers still the tallest stalks in that architectural garden. A ceramic angel spreads her plaster wings atop the middle panel, while in the grass, more tightly barbered here than in any of the surrounding yards, a statuette of the Virgin Mary bows her head. Written on a billboard are the names of every police officer and firefighter who died that Tuesday morning. A winding path of cinder blocks bears a hand-painted roll call of all the soldiers who never came home from Afghanistan. Our heart and praying hands go out to the world. God bless 9/11/01 America, reads the message on a concrete foundation roadmap we weeds. Since 2001, the 9/11 Memorial Corner has been a labor of love for Moose and Susie Fitch, who live in one of the few houses left on the block. But Moose is 57. Years of hanging drywall have left him with bone spurs on his spine, arthritis in his joints. Allergic to pain medication, he has no choice but to endure the aches that are his trade's only pension. Last winter, the Michigan cold caused him, quote, a massive amount of pain. So much pain that he decided to leave Flint for Roswell, New Mexico, where he knows a Mormon missionary who visited the corner while evangelizing in the Vehicle City years ago. Moose figured he needed $3,500 to make it to New Mexico. That would be enough to fix up his 1991 GMC Safari for the 1,500-mile drive and rent him and Susie an apartment until they could find jobs. He had a check coming from a drywall job that would finance the move. The house would have fetched $25,000, Moose figured. But if he sold it, would the new buyer look after the 9/11 corner? He couldn't include that as a clause in the deed. So Moose decided to give away his house, along with the condition that the new owners tend the corner. Being poor like we are, we're going to be poor here, we're going to be poor somewhere else, he figured. It's a leg up for someone. At first, Moose tried to give the house to a soldier. He went to a VA hospital and a VFW hall, but in both places he got the same reaction. The North End? That's the most violent drug marketplace in Flint. He offered the house to a member of the Flint Area Good News Riders, the Christian motorcyclist group that attends Memorial Day candlelight vigils at the corner. They didn't want it either. Because of the violence and all the hatred, it's been very hard, Moose said. Everybody basically said they don't want to live here because of what's here. But it's peaceful compared to what it was. When we moved in here 19 years ago, the news people reported on drug deals. They talked about it being a curbside drug market. But now all the properties around here are clear, so someone can come in and build the life they want. Having failed in three attempts to give away his house, Moose thought about a young man who'd grown up in the North End, just a few blocks from the corner. Moose had known Javon since he was 8 or 9. When Moose and Susie were building the memorial, Javon traced an outline of the New York City skyline on the platform in front of the mural. Javon was married now with a 6-year-old daughter and a 4-month-old son, but the young family was too poor to afford its own place. Javon sometimes earned money doing manual labor, such as tearing down trailers, but he was unemployed. His wife Cassidy worked 20 hours a week at McDonald's, earning $8.47 an hour. So they bounced around between relatives. They lived with Javon's mom on the North End. Now they were staying with Cassidy's mother on the east side of Flint. Moose called him. Hey, young man, he asked, how'd you like your own house? Javon said he'd have to talk it over with his wife. When he did, Cassidy was speechless. The neighborhood didn't bother them because they'd lived there before, and they'd only have to pay $133 a month in property taxes. Not being able to afford our own place, we've kind of been going as we go, she said. This means everything to us. It's just so hard to do everything by myself because I'm the only one working. There's only one stipulation. Javon and Cassidy have to mow the grass on the corner. Moose doesn't want to see it disappear under a rising tide of greenery, like so much else that has been abandoned in Flint.
Edward McClelland reading from his essay Meet the Flintstones in the book Happy Anyway, a Flint Anthology. We're talking with Scott Atkinson. He's the editor of a new book of essays called Happy Anyway, a Flint Anthology. One of the things that often has struck me when I talk with people from Flint or when I hear interviews with people from Flint is how tough they seem to be, how much they seem to love Flint despite its problems. They seem to have a resolve to stick it out to make things better if they can. Do you think there's something to that? And if so, do you think it's reflected in the pages of this book?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it's universally true. One of my best friends grew up on the east side of Flint, which is not a great area, and he doesn't live there anymore, and I think he's fine with that. But at the same time, you do see a lot of people who take a lot of pride in living there. I put this book together thinking of an audience of outsiders. You know, an anthology will typically be bought by that audience of the city, but I just wanted to show people that, you know, it's more than it gets so easily boiled down to. I mean, I've written about you know, Flint for a lot of different places. And I've written stories, these headlines that kind of boil, you have to have Flint boiled down to these one or two sentences, and it's easy to get that. I think it's easy for people to see Flint as one thing. And like any city, depending on where you drive, it looks very different. You know, downtown Flint is a fun place to be. I work down there. I'm at the university. I work there every day and I love it. You don't have to drive very far for it to look very different. You drive a few minutes in the other direction, and you're in a neighborhood of old Victorian homes that are well kept up by homeowners that, you know, take a lot of pride in that. My wife and I were looking for homes in the College Cultural District once, and we talked to this guy, and the price in his house had gone down a few times, and at some point he refused to budge. He said, at this point, if I sell it, you know, more cheaply, then I'm afraid that it'll be bought by someone who can't afford to keep it up, and I want this neighborhood to stick it out, and so he's still paying taxes on that house. Because he doesn't want to do that to the neighborhood. I wanted to be surprised, but I also knew there were things I wanted. And so I did solicit some pieces from writers I knew. I wanted to make sure there was a certain level of diversity. So there were certain writers I reached out to because I knew, A, they had good stories to tell, and B, I didn't frankly want a book about Flint be written solely by white people when it's a book that's largely a minority. But then I just kind of let the submissions come in. What my fear was that I was not going to accomplish the mission in getting what I wanted. That I was afraid I was going to get a lot of sprawling essays, you know, musing on the death of the auto industry, which I didn't want. But they were all exactly what I wanted. They spoke to some really big universal themes, but they did it through being very specific. So there are lots of stories about homes. You know, what does it mean to stick it out? What does it mean to leave and to think about that and to still claim it as your home even though you're gone? What does it mean to come back and try to make a life there?
Well, from what you've told me, it seems to me that you've achieved what you were hoping to with this book in terms of reflecting modern day life in Flint, the good and the bad, despite a title like Happy Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing I am happy about is that a lot of that contemporary life, though it is a very contemporary book, a lot of the history shines through. There were certain things I wanted to include, and I wasn't sure how, like the famous 1936-37 sit-down strike, which basically gave birth to organized labor in the factories. How do you write about that without it being a boring history story? But another writer I know, Katie Curnow, wrote this essay about how her grandmother, there's this picture of her grandmother holding a sign, striking outside, you know, a plant, or, you know, she's a little girl, she's not striking, she's with the picket line. And there's this long family lore of how that's grandma, they think, they're pretty sure, right? And so it's this long essay, not just about the sit-down strike, we get all those details, but about this desperate need to be connected to Flint's past. You were asking earlier about, you know, what does it mean, or that kind of resilience and that, you know, taking on the city. You know, Katie now lives outside the city, even though she feels like that's kind of where she grew up. And so there's this real need for her and her family to feel that deep connection to Flint's history and Flint's roots. So it's about the sit-down strike, but it's also about what does it mean to be from Flint and to take pride in that history.
The book is Happy Anyway, a Flint anthology, a collection of essays depicting life in Flint from Belt Publishing. Scott Atkinson is the book's editor. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.